The Sadducees were the fundamentalists of their day. They held to a strict literal interpretation of the Pentateuch, those first five books of the Bible, which were at that time thought to be authored completely by Moses. So you notice they quote Moses here. And one of the differences between them and the Pharisees is that the Pharisees believed in a sort of an ongoing revelation, that ideas developed over the centuries through rabbinic teaching, and that the Bible was a kind of a living organism. And they had this thing called midrash, where an interpreter of the Bible would put things in the in the margins, comments about a certain text. And then over time, those comments would be included in new versions, new copies of the Bible, so that it continued to be written. And that's still true in Judaism today. Their Bible is more of a living thing than ours. Ours was set by the end of the first century, and we don't tamper with it after that. Except we kind of do. We call it tradition. The fathers of the church, those early theologians, men and women in the first four centuries, they had various interpretations of the Bible. But by the time you get to the 8th and 9th century, some other new ideas were added into that. By the time you get to Thomas Aquinas and the theologians of his day, they add to that on down to our present day, and the various ecumenical councils like Vatican II add certain teaching to that, so that in a way, through tradition, our understanding of the Bible is a living reality as well. But if you get locked in to one period and one interpretation, then the whole thing narrows down and it becomes very difficult for God to speak to you. And that's where the Pharisees were. And so, the Sadducees were there. The Pharisees, they believed in this ongoing interpretation of the Bible. And so the book of Maccabees that was written only a century or so before Christ, where, and we heard that from the first reading this evening, they're talking about resurrection of human beings. In the earlier books of the Bible, the first five books, there was no mention of people living on. The best you could hope for was that you lived on in your descendants, but you personally didn't live on after death. When you're dead, you're dead. That's it. And so all the promises given in the Pentateuch, they're about the living, and living in Israel, and being a part of God, and being obedient to God's laws, and reaping certain benefits from that. But when you die, you die. That's it. But that reading we just heard, all the talk about resurrection all through that reading, those heroic people believed that they were going to rise from the dead, and so they were willing to go to their death. They were willing to become martyrs for the truth, because they didn't really believe that their persecutors could rob them forever of life. Well, don't we believe the same thing? We have a tradition in the church all through the 20 centuries of martyrdom, people willing to go to their death because they didn't believe that they were really ultimately going to be killed, that they were going to live on in sharing the glory of God. And so you have this confrontation in the gospel this evening of these Sadducees trying to trip Jesus up. They already know the answer to their question. They don't believe there's a resurrection of the dead. And so they're trying to trick Jesus, to trap him into something that they can accuse him of. And so, as so often in the gospel stories about Jesus and either the Pharisees or the Sadducees trying to trip him up, Jesus takes the whole argument to the next level and blows them completely out of the water. And so Jesus says, we don't know whose wife she's going to be. That's people who live in the next age, life is different, it's transformed. Life gets transformed in this life too, and that is what helps us believe that life is going to be transformed on into the future as well. So let me give you a couple of examples. A child in the womb is very different from someone who is 20 years old. And it's a traumatic death experience. Birth is dangerous. Over the centuries, many people died in childbirth. It's a traumatic experience going from 9 months of warmth and security in the womb, going through the birth canal, and then being slapped into some kind of breathing, you know. It has to be a traumatic experience. And yet, they're willing to go through that because they trust implicitly that there's something beyond that birth canal, beyond that death. And so I am the same person as I was in the womb, but I'm very different. I don't look like I did then, but I'm the same person. And when I get into the next life, I'm probably going to look very different from the way I do now. I hope so anyway. But I'm going to be the same person. And we go through various deaths in this life. We go through loss of job. People sometimes go through divorce. Sometimes one loses their spouse in death. Sometimes people fail in ways that are tragic, and they resurrect from all of those deaths. But each one of those deaths, particularly if they're open to grace, transforms them into something that they would not have been if they hadn't gone through that death. Think about that. How many things have happened to you in your life where if those things hadn't happened, you wouldn't be who you are now? Death is the beginning of life. And every transformation that we succeed through helps us to believe that when we go through the heart actually stopping, when we go through what we normally call death, that's really a birth canal. That's really a transformation into the next life. And so Jesus doesn't answer the question, what's it going to look like? You know, who's going to be seated at the table? And what are we going to be eating in the heavenly banquet? You know, he doesn't get into those details. He just encourages us to trust that God, who is always on our side and who enters into our human existence in Jesus to show us the way to get there, the journey, the way, and encourages us to trust that God is always, even when it's imperceptible, even when it seems like tragedy and death, God is always leading us to greater and deeper life. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He also suggests that a lot of that resurrected life has already begun now. And so when we turn ourselves over to the mystery of life that we find in Christ, when we allow the Spirit of God to dwell in our very bodies and transform us over and over again, we are already experiencing the resurrected life now. And the more we can tap into that and experience that and trust that now, the more we're going to trust that this is going to go on forever. But you can turn that around too. You can say, the more I believe that this is going to last forever, the more I can believe that something must be happening now. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? My belief in everlasting life or my belief in resurrected life now? Doesn't matter. They're both true. And one feeds off of the other. And so don't worry about which comes first. Just trust the mystery. Immerse yourself in the mystery of the risen Lord and participate in his resurrection. And that's what we're doing here at the altar every Sunday, isn't it? We're participating in the risen life of the one who died for us. And we're trusting over and over again and more deeply as life goes on, we're trusting that this is going to lead us to an eternal resurrection, that we're going to be transformed into a dynamic sharing in God's life, and we don't know the details, but as St. Paul says, we don't know what we will be then, but we do know that we will be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Those are the words of St. Paul. We need to feed off of those words. We need to trust that St. Paul is absolutely right. While we don't know the details, we know that resurrected life exists now and then.